We've set this part of the program in a school bathroom. Why? Because our research shows this is one of the dangerous areas for kids. This is where they're likely to be cornered, where they're likely to be afraid to go. Some kids tell us they won't go to the bathroom the whole day at school because they're afraid of what might happen here. Now, as we begin to really get into the issue of bullying, harassment, and emotional violence, of course, there's a temptation to think this is a simple problem. Just find the bullies, get rid of them, and it's over. But I want to begin by emphasizing how complex this is and how important it is that we avoid simple and easy understandings of the problem as well as simple and easy solutions to it. You know, we have a tendency to look for the easy and the simple in our society. The great satirical humorist of the 1920s, H.L. Mencken, once wrote, "For every complex problem, there is a simple solution, which is almost invariably wrong." And that's part of what our research shows us, that simple answers, simple questions don't really do it. Maybe I can sort of make this point with a parable. A parable, of course, is a teaching story. And I think this is one that has a lot to teach us as we seek to zero in on what's going on here and avoid the obvious, easy solutions. It's called the parable of the lamppost. And in the parable of the lamppost, a friend of ours, we'll call him Joe, is on his way home from a meeting one night. As he walks down the street, he finds his friend George on his hands and knees on the street under a lamppost. And Joe, being a good American, stops and says, "George, what's the problem?" And George says, "Well, Joe, you know, I've lost my car keys, and I live 35 miles away, and I can't go home until I find them." "Well," says Joe, "let me help you." And like a good American, he rolls up his sleeves, and he gets down on the street and begins searching around looking for the for the keys. Well, some time passes and they haven't found the keys. So Joe says, "Wait a minute, George. Maybe we need a more systematic approach. Maybe we need a public health approach." So from his pocket, he pulls out a piece of chalk and he draws a grid there on the street under the lamppost. And he labels the boxes A through Z and 1 through 26. "Now," he says, "we can search systematically." So they do. Box A1, box A2, box A3, box A4, box A5, all the way till they get to box Z26. They haven't found the car keys. "Well," says Joe, "no." He says, "maybe we need a more behavioral approach." So from his other pocket, he pulls out a bag of M&Ms. He says, "George, now I'm going to feed you these M&Ms to get your behavior under control." And pretty soon he's got George moving right and left and back and forth, and it's very impressive. But they haven't found the keys. "Well," says Joe, "no." He says, "maybe what we need is a more psychoanalytic, psychodynamic approach." So he begins to ask George about early experiences of loss in his life. And soon George is remembering when he was 4 years old, he lost his teddy bear, and how these feelings of loss are flooding back to him now with the loss of his car keys. And he gets great insight, but he still can't go home. "Well," says Joe, "no." And he says, "maybe we need an educational approach." So from his bag, he pulls out a book entitled The History of the Key in Western Civilization. And they read about how the great filmmaker Ingmar Bergman used the key as a symbol in his films, and how Woody Allen picked up on that in his films, and they have this fascinating discussion. Still no keys. "Well," says Joe, he says, "maybe we need a support group." So he gets out his cell phone. He calls other people who've lost their car keys. And they tell George about how they felt when they lost their keys. And soon George is feeling okay about losing his keys. But he still can't go home. "Well," says Joe, "no." He says, "maybe we need a campaign to find the keys." So from his bag, he takes out a banner. He puts it up and says, "Find the keys." He gives out key-shaped blue ribbons, and they put them on T-shirts and say, "Find the keys." And link arms, and they chant, "Find the keys, find the keys." And they feel really empowered. But they still haven't found the keys. Finally, Joe says, "All right, George, let's take a really radical approach. Where exactly were you when you dropped the keys?" And George says, "Oh, I was about 150 yards up the road when I dropped the keys." So Joe says, "But George, why are we looking here?" And George says, "Well, because the light is much better here." Now that really has something to tell us about how we look at these problems. The problem is not going to be solved if we simply look in the easy places. We have to be willing to go up the road into the dark places. Now, we have a lot of examples in our history of taking this lamppost approach. The idea that take troubled kids to prison for a day, and they'll be so scared, they'll be scared straight. Tell kids, just say no. Even the DARE program, bringing police officers to school to talk about drugs. They seem like a good idea. They seem like an easy solution, but the research shows they really don't do it. And some of this derives from our unwillingness to really go and look where the issues are, but issues that make us uncomfortable. Let me give you an example. Anybody who has really studied the problem of youth violence clearly recognizes that the problem of youth violence is tied to the problem of homophobia, bias and discrimination and negative treatment of kids who are gay and lesbian. Now, a recent study provides some very specific data about how integral this problem of homophobia is to the problem of youth violence in general, and particularly the problem of kids being bullied and harassed at school. The study found, when comparing lesbian and gay youth with heterosexual youth, that, for example, about 25% of the gay and lesbian kids said they missed school during the past month because they felt unsafe at school, 25%, as opposed to 5% of the heterosexual youth. When it came to being threatened with a weapon at school, almost 33% of the lesbian and gay kids said they'd been threatened with a weapon at school, as opposed to 7% of the heterosexual kids. When it came to having their property damaged at school, 51% of the gay and lesbian kids said this had happened to them, as opposed to about 29% of the heterosexual kids. Now, when it came to having gotten in a fight during the past 12 months, only 8% of the gay and lesbian kids said they'd been in a fight, as opposed to almost 38% of the heterosexual kids. But when it came to being in a fight which required medical attention, medical treatment, which probably means being beat up, lesbian and gay kids said 14% said they had been so attacked, as opposed to 4% of the heterosexual kids. So it's pretty clear, if you're willing to look at the data, if you're willing to open your eyes, that the problem of homophobia, the harassment, the bullying, the emotional violence directed against gay and lesbian kids is essential to understanding the problem of bullying and harassment in general, the problem of youth violence in schools in general, and we have to be willing to do that. Let me give you an example. In the last year, I was asked to speak at a statewide Safe Schools conference. It was a governor's conference. The governor said, everybody in our state, we want you to come out and work together to reduce school violence. And the Secretary of Education of the state sent out a blanket invitation. He said, I want every group in our state who is working on this issue to come, be represented, have a booth, give out your materials, and participate. Well, one of the groups that submitted an application to participate was a group called PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbian and Gay Kids, a very important group because they're trying to help people understand, they're trying to support lesbian and gay kids. And from what you've just heard, you know that dealing with homophobia is one of the essential elements of dealing with bullying and violence at school. Well, the Secretary of Education rejected PFLAG's application. He said, your goals aren't consistent with ours. Well, what he really was saying was, we can't deal with issues of homophobia in public because it makes us uncomfortable and it taps into the bias of a lot of people. Well, I made a stink about it at the conference, and the governor, I think, heard the message, and so he reached out and invited PFLAG to participate. So the story has a sort of happy resolution. But it does point to the importance of the parable of the lamppost. We have to be willing to go up the road, to look in the places that we don't ordinarily want to look, to not say we can solve these problems with a banner or a slogan or just by, you know, treating one kid, but to look at the whole system, the whole culture. And that's what we're going to try to do in this program.